Linda Fairstein was chief of the sex crimes unit of the District Attorney's Office in Manhattan for more than two decades and is America's foremost legal expert on sexual assault and domestic violence. She is also a best-selling author. After publishing 16 novels, Fairstein can still keep her legion of fans on the edge of their seats, offering roller coaster plot twists and simmering emotional foreplay between her two main characters, Mike Chapman and Alexandra Cooper. She forwards the story in her new novel, Devil's Bridge. It's always a delight to welcome Linda Fairstein to the Roundtable. Linda, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Good to be with you.
What led you to this particular story?
I've had one goal of mine for a number of years now. Often when I do a reading or signing at a bookstore, somebody will raise his or her hand and say, what else would you like to write? Is there something you want to do beside the Alex Cooper series? My answer for a long time has been Alex Cooper's my main protagonist, as you know, in 16 books. Her chief sidekick, professional partner, is New York City homicide detective Mike Chapman. And I've always wanted to do a book from Mike's point of view. He is, I think, the reason I have so many male readers is they like Mike. He's strong and smart and funny and a just classic NYPD good detective. Women just seem to enjoy his company, like Alex does. So my editor heard me say this time after time again, and he said, why don't you just do it 2 years ago? I said, because you're the editor, and it's the Alex Cooper series, and you're the guy I was afraid of. And he said, if you think you can write a book from a man's point of view, do it. So I sat down to write this book. It was our secret. Didn't tell my lit agent, didn't tell the fans or anyone else. And this book was about trying to see the world from Mike Chapman's eyes. So Alex Cooper has a bad day in court, something I'm very familiar with, and she goes dark, and everybody thinks it's just a tantrum. She's not needed the next day. She's sleeping in. Mike Chapman's working a homicide scene, and he picks up the narrative for the first time in this series, six chapters in, and the real treat for me is looking at the world through Mike's eyes, professionally, personally, working with the police commissioner, working with and against some of the city politicians. It's a much more fast-paced, I think, thriller, a very muscular book, and great fun to write.
What was it like to write from that character perspective? I mean, does it take a little while before you felt fully comfortable with it?
Yes, it did take a while to feel comfortable. I wasn't afraid of doing it till my editor said, try it. And then I kind of thought, whoa, I've got to totally change tones. I mean, I've written 16 books with one character's world displayed. So I think the transition chapters for me were the hardest. Mike picked up, and I struggled a bit, and I finally decided to just start with him being in the middle of the night at a murder scene at an apartment in Harlem. And by doing that, I had him in his comfort zone. I could think through how he handles a case, because I know that very well from my own work with city detectives and being at some of those crime scenes. And I just didn't get comfortable till I put him in his own milieu and started to write him. So I had about three attempts at the first way for us to see Mike, and then struck this one, and I think I make a comfortable transition. We'll hear from the critics before too long.
Does it ever feel like you're cheating on the other character?
Alex is, in a sense, my fictional alter ego. She's not like me personally, but professionally she has my job, so it's been so easy to think like her. And all your listeners will be familiar with a book and movie called Gone Girl.
Right.
The concept in Gone Girl was a really brilliant, by Gillian Flynn, two narrators. I mean, the female narrator, the wife, starts the story, and then the husband picks up, and it went back and forth. And I did not want to be accused of copying her because my goal was entirely different. I did not have an unreliable narrator. I had two people my readers know and like, and I hope new readers know and like. But I basically made the decision not to do that, not to jump back to Alex three chapters later and show where she is. And I had to think about it hard. I mean, did I want to lose her voice? So basically, I did cheat on her. I mean, I put her in a box. I put her in a black hole for the next 300 pages while Mike tells the story and tries to find her. So, yes, sir, I did cheat on Alex Cooper.
But it also allows you to do something that I assume is not only creative, but playful as well.
Absolutely. I keep using the word fun when I'm in bookstores and people ask me what it was like to do this, especially readers who have been with the series. I keep using the word fun. I mean, it was just so much fun to think like a guy in the first place. And Mike's got different language than Alex, a little rougher. He's got a much blacker sense of humor. He is far more impulsive. I mean, she's a lawyer who reasons things out, and he's much more likely to use his hands in solving a situation when he's got them wrapped around a suspect's neck. So it was definitely playful to do in a serious sense. I knew I had a serious story on my hands, but just great fun to be somebody else.
Of course, you're writing a character that you have written before that you know. Were you ever challenged by, I don't know this about this character?
I mean, that's something that I haven't been asked before, and it's really true, especially about Mike, because I've seen the world through Alex's eyes and I know her so intimately. I just know instinctively what to do with her. And for Mike, I put in a couple of scenes to do exactly this. I mean, the police commissioner brings him in to headquarters to work on the investigation, which would seem unlikely since he's become intimate with Alex. But everybody tells the commissioner, this guy knows her better than anybody, so we want to know how she thinks. Mike knows how bad her temper is. And what would that do if she was in the hands of somebody she'd crossed? Would she ratchet up the stakes against her because she's temperamental? I set up another scene. Mike is sandbagged. The commissioner brings in the department psychiatrist, a woman, to sort of plumb his subconscious, if you will, to see if there's anything else there that would help figure who would have wanted to do harm to Alex. So, yes, I make Mike express for the first time what he likes about Alex, what he doesn't like about Alex, what he would change. I think it was only through this device that I forced myself to think that way.
As I mentioned, you were chief of the sex crimes unit of the district attorney's office in Manhattan for over 2 decades. What brought you initially, going back to the first book, what initially brought you to write Alexandra Cooper?
I hope that none of your listeners can find my high school yearbooks, but they would all say that, you know, ambition or what do you want to do when you grow up, all said writer. It's what I always wanted to do. I had a very practical, loving, but practical father who used to roll his eyes and say, you know, you have nothing to write about. Think of a career. Get a job. And last night I went to college. I majored in English Lit. Went to college in Poughkeepsie, and hope you're listening area.
Yep.
And then decided that my father was right at senior year, that I really needed a job, and my other interest was public service. And I went to law school with an interest in becoming a prosecutor. I never gave up the dream of writing books, so I was first asked in the early 90s to write a nonfiction book about really the pioneering work that my colleagues did in this field, and got city permission, the ethics department commission to do it, and then asked the judge at the hearing, how about fiction? And he said, lady, everybody thinks they can write a book. When you're done with this one, you think you can write fiction, that's fine. Do it on your own time, not the city time. So it was just a long-held dream, and part two of this is people came to us all the time, television producers, movie producers. Scott Turow wrote The Great Presumed Innocent. The director of the movie was Alan Pakula, a director whom I knew in New York, who called and asked me if I would be an unpaid consultant because the victim in that homicide in Presumed Innocent is a sex crimes prosecutor. Would I spend time with the actors and look at the script? Mm. So everybody else seemed to think my job was interesting. So the third part is the old adage, write what you know.
Right.
It just seemed natural for me, if I was going to write, to draw from the job that so fascinated me, that kept me in that office, and that really changed so dramatically with changes in law and the introduction of things like DNA technology. So those all drew me to create a protagonist I could be familiar with, make her much younger than I am, thinner, blonder, younger, and tell stories through her point of view.
Given the emotional nature of the job you held, was there ever an inkling to get away from that subject?
Yeah, that's a really good question that nobody's asked quite yet. most people from the outside especially, including my own family, thought that the job must be terribly dark and couldn't imagine what kept me in it. Had I started this kind of prosecuting years before I did, when the laws were hopeless and there was no such thing as forensic DNA, probably would not have stayed very long, would have been very frustrated by it. The great thing, and that was just the good luck of timing, was when I got to the DA's office, the laws were so archaic, they were beginning to be changed. We had a lot of input, my colleagues and I, into reforming the law, helping to write some of those changes. I was one of five prosecutors in the country asked to use DNA in 1986 before it was anywhere accepted in the courts of our country. And people, I think in part I wrote these books almost as a catharsis to let people see that this world was not entirely dark. I didn't spend my time with the dark people. I got to help survivors get justice in a courtroom. And that's really a big part of the reason that I set out to write the books, to show Alex Cooper's world and what the, yes, there are tragedies in it, but what the triumphs are in that world.
Well, the 17th Alexandra Cooper thriller is out, which brings us inside the mind of NYPD Detective Mike Chapman. The book is Devil's Bridge. It is published by Dutton. Linda Fairstein, thank you so much for spending time with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe, for having me. Good questions.
Thank you very much. Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Devil's Bridge. It is published by Dutton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.